Welcome to show number 78 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by sportscardradio.com. What is going on, everybody? Great to be here. Great to be back. Another edition of the Sports Card Show podcast. On our last show, we had Tracy Hackler from Panini. Got some good emails. Seemed like people really enjoyed that. Sounded like Tracy had a good time. So we'll definitely have him back on in the future. But I wanted to follow up on the show. He didn't have an answer for one of our questions, but he sent me an email. If you haven't checked out our forum, I posted on there shortly after the show. Or if you haven't, I'll have to update maybe the show notes from the last show. But basically, the question that we had that he didn't have an answer to was, what happens when you have a redemption card that you send into him? And what happens, I think you pick like 4 months, either wait like 4 months or 8 months, something like that. And what happens after 8 months if you want to wait? Well, basically, you're not put into an automatic redemption. So say you're waiting for a Kobe Bryant autograph, and Kobe is busy, and Kobe can't sign his cards, or his fingers are all jacked up, and he can't sign cards. Whatever the reason might be, he might have some love triangle to deal with too, but not the triangle offense, but a love triangle to deal with. You know, maybe he doesn't have the cards. Well, you're not automatically put into a redemption. You're not going to be sent a Kevin Durant or a John Wall autograph or something like that in replacement of your Kobe. Not that I'm saying that would be the replacement. I have no idea. I'm sure they have a direct line to Kobe. If you get a Kobe redemption, my guess is you'll get it back. And in fact, I've seen a lot of them being signed over the summer. It seems like Kobe might wait until the end of the season to handle those kind of things, but I could be wrong. But anyways, after 8 months, you're not put in an automatic redemption. They're still waiting for the cards. Basically, Panini has a threshold at some point. It might be 8 months. It might be much. It's probably typically much longer than that. It may be more closer to 16 months. Or maybe even 24 months, where if a player hasn't sent it back, they're going to cut their ties and try to work out some kind of deal with you. But they'll contact you in that situation. The email that Tracy forwarded to me encouraged you to go ahead and contact Panini after 8 months. Maybe contact them. Hey, maybe there was a mistake. Maybe they did get the cards back, and for some reason they didn't give you the redemption. I don't know. Or maybe they do have an attractive replacement for you. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe they'll be able to give you some more color, some more insight onto why the player has taken so long, whatever it might be. But I just wanted to throw that out there and to let you know that after 8 months on a redemption, you're not automatically thrown into a replacement pool. That kind of only happens after Panini realizes they are not getting the autograph, or you decide to. At any point, it sounds like you can decide to trade out for something else, and it sounds like Panini will work with you. So just send the people over there an email and understand that they're doing the best job that they can, and they want you to get your card back too. Because imagine, just put yourself in the customer service position. They want you getting your cards, because if every customer, or let's say even like 99% of all customers Panini had, weren't sending emails, weren't calling customer service, their job would be incredibly easy. So they wouldn't have to be working very hard. They might be able to sit around the office and bring up Justin TV and ESPN and stuff like I used to do. Which maybe explains why I don't have a job, or a regular job, I guess. But maybe I shouldn't recommend that. But I'm just saying that these people, they want you to get your cards. They do the best they can. Sometimes they can't throw athletes and stuff like that under the bus and blame it on them per se, because a lot of their business revolves around them. So keep those things in mind when you contact them. But we wanted to throw that update out there right in the beginning of the show. And we've got a lot of good things on tap for today's show. We'll see how well they work out. But for our main topic today, I'm going to have a collecting strategies. And if you go over to the show notes on sportscardradio.com, find the archive, I put up like a little spider web. I used to work for this insurance salesman. He had all these wacky theories. He was actually a pretty cool guy. He taught me a lot of different things. Sometimes some of his marketing ideas and some of them are a little out there. But they usually made a lot of sense when he broke them down. Sometimes he wanted to go a little farther than maybe he should have with some of them, but he had some really good ideas, and one of them was kind of a spider web. I don't know if it was his idea or if he got these from someone else, but he was kind of the guy I first learned them from, or conceptualized them from, I guess. But basically a spider web. So you have card collecting, and there's all kinds of different ways you can go with card collecting. You can like buy and sell boxes, you can buy and sell prospects, you can set build, you can player collect, you can do all these different kind of things. So I put up kind of a web of kind of maybe, you know, if you're into collecting, or if you're just getting back into collecting, or if you're, you know, figuring out which way you can go, maybe you can take a look at the spider web. The thing about a spider web, and the way the insurance agent kind of explained it to me, is that, you know, you have the spider web, and you have, you know, the central part of the spider web, but everything else kind of connects to it. So even if you're a set builder, there's aspects of buying and selling and trading involved usually with set building, because sometimes you might end up with some doubles and things like that, and you want to get rid of those and, you know, to acquire the cards that you don't have. So you've got to either do some selling and some trading. And with buying and selling, sometimes you have to accumulate things and maybe acquire the right cards and do some research, and that might be some things that you got to do in set building. So it all kind of ties together, and it's kind of good to know all the different aspects out there, especially if you're just getting back into it. It's not that you have to pick one. That's the same. That's the beauty of the spider web. You can travel. You know, spiders are, you know, they build spider webs for a reason, so they can travel along and they can move on there in quick, make adjustments, and obviously capture prey and eat and stuff like that, and lay eggs, I guess. I don't know if they do those in the web or not, but I know that they definitely capture other insects and eat. So you can do that. You can lay out your collector web. And so we'll talk about that. Some collector strategies, so to speak. But to put a visual on it, I made a little spider web. And so you can take a look at that. And so we'll talk a little bit about that probably on the back half of today's show. For right now, we'll definitely be talking about the NBA draft. We just had the NBA draft today. You'll probably be listening to this on Friday over the weekend, but we'll definitely talk about the NBA draft. I'm really excited about the NBA draft, so hopefully they have a season next year. We'll talk a little bit about that. I don't think we have to worry about that too much, at least at this point, but we'll talk about the NBA draft. There were some trades, so all kinds of stuff. I know baseball is the only thing that's going on right now, but baseball, mid-season baseball, sometimes the NBA draft might, for me at least, is slightly more exciting than, you know, three-game set in the middle of July, but we'll talk about the NBA draft. But we've got right away, right off the top, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the basic news and some of the stuff that's happened on the sports card world since we had a show, which was like at the first of the month. But basically, 2011 Bowman's out, and we haven't seen the Bryce Harper Super Refractors, but we've seen some others. They go for about $100, $300, you know, not too much, but the Bryce Harpers, you know, we're waiting for that super refractor to materialize, but his red autographs are out there. Those are autographed out of five, serial number out of five. I think most of them have been out there. Four or five of them have been sold. And this one, one of them went for $6,450. So those are selling quite a bit. So you can imagine if you pulled the one of one super refractor, you're probably looking at five digits. If you get it on eBay and you do it right, and you didn't drop the card or something on the way to scan it and put it on eBay with your excitement. So five figures, I think, would be comfortable. We'll see if it ever materializes in the secondary market. So hopefully that would be interesting. Interesting card to see. For those of you that are planning a getaway, a vacation, maybe something to do this summer, there's definitely something to do August 3rd through the 7th in Rosemont, Illinois, which I guess is somewhere near Chicago, although Illinois is not the biggest state in the world. That's coming from someone that lives in California, so any other state looks, other than Texas, I guess, looks fairly small. Rosemont, Illinois, August 3rd to the 7th, National Sports Card Convention. Wish I could be there. That would be an amazing trip. I would love to make the trip. I would love to go. I would say I'd love to go, but I'm so much of like the Las Vegas trip kind of took it out. I think if I didn't go to Las Vegas, I would have thought a little bit more about maybe going to the National Card Convention, but I'm hoping they come back out here. I think they're going back out east or further east for 2013 or 2012. But I'm hoping maybe they come back out here, out west, at some point. So we'll see. I don't know. Los Angeles would be a good spot. San Francisco would be nice. I know it's probably slightly, maybe slightly more expensive out here. I don't know. Rosemont might have high commercial real estate and convention center real estate. I have no idea. But if you're interested, if you're in the area, August 3rd through the 7th, check it out. If you're anywhere in that area, I can encourage you to go because pretty much everything will be there. Every single card, any kind of collection. We'll be talking about all kinds of collection strategies and the segments in the hobby later. All those will be represented there and more. So, you know, you definitely be able to get your full fill there. So that'll be very exciting. Another little bit of news that crossed the wire actually this evening. Card Corner Club, we've had them, Rob from Voice of the Collector on the show. He's part of Card Corner Club, and they do their podcast pretty much every week. I think they have Dimitri Young, former baseball player, on there. I think you can live call in. They have all kinds of different guests, interesting guests and stuff like that on there. I know we've obviously talked about it on the show, and so you're familiar with them. And then you're probably familiar with Cardboard Connection, too. They have some banners on our site, and we have a member on our fan forum that is starting to write for them. Well, those two sites have now, I think, combined or joined forces. I'm not exactly sure what the agreement is. But basically, those two will be working together, so you'll be able to get some good information from both and start seeing. I'm not exactly sure if Card Corner Club, the website, is going away and they're just moving to Cardboard Connection. I'm not 100% sure, but you'll be able to find it all out at cardboardconnection.com. But the podcast is definitely not going away. Their podcast looks like it's going to be airing on Fridays at 11 p.m. Eastern. So that'll be good. You'll be able to get your, I think that's weekly, so you'll be able to get your weekly fill there. And whenever I am not lazy enough to record these, you'll get these. But maybe I'll try to time them away from the Fridays. So, although it might be kind of nice, I know I like to sometimes get my, sometimes I'm in the mood for like stock market podcast or whatever, so I kind of like to listen to two or three in a row. Sometimes I'm in the mood for poker one, sometimes I'm in the mood for comedy, so it's sometimes nice to have them there. So as you know, my rituals, I kind of do them whenever I feel like it, so we'll see what happens. But you can expect them Fridays, 11 p.m. Eastern time, over on Cardboard Connection and Card Corner Club .net. So there you go. As for the products that have come out this month, there's been some decent ones. There's been a couple of baseball. Topps Pro Debut Baseball and Topps Series 2 Baseball. I'd call these both kind of weak. We opened up I wouldn't say weak. They are kind of what they are. I don't think anybody thought they were going to be amazing sets. I think Topps Series 2 might be a little bit less than normal, but it is what it is. Series 1 is usually a little bit better, has slightly better players and things like that, and it's like fresh, it's like new. Series 2 just kind of seems like, you know, an old footprint or something like that. But both boxes are selling in that $50 range, so it is rather affordable. I know you get 36 packs in Series 2, so you do get quite a bit of bang for your buck, and you get the one, usually a jersey card per. So, but you know, other than outside of a couple random hits and some rare hits, I wouldn't say that you got a whole lot of great cards in there. But they're probably worth checking out if you're a baseball fan. But I think there'll be better baseball sets coming out throughout the season. Whether into prospects, I think the minor league heritage set that's coming out might be kind of interesting. And then you've got Bowman Chrome. That we've got a checklist up. We got checklists of both those sets up already. So I think both of those look a little more exciting than these sets. And then you have, obviously, Topps Chrome. You got all kinds of other baseball sets that are coming out, you know, Triple Threads and Tribute. Not Tribute, but there's all kinds of baseball sets that are coming out. So Series 2 might be one that you can pass. I think both of those you can comfortably pass over on the box-wise because I don't think you're going to be getting a whole lot in those, and I don't think the price is going to go up a whole bunch on those because I don't think either one of them have, you know, I think you could pick up those boxes in the summer for $50 if you feel like it. Michael Jackson has his Panini cards out. A little bit of a controversy and a whirlwind. Some people didn't like that Panini cut up their cards. I think they're still, that just goes to show you, there's still a lot of people out there that didn't even know that they've been cutting up memorabilia for years. And, you know, I think the companies and us as other collector, more experienced collectors and stuff, we need to be more aware of that. We need to promote it, I think, a little bit more. The fact that I was amazed how many people when I had a hobby shop, that would come in there and they didn't know that they had jersey cards and autographs in the packs. That was just, like, amazing for them. They remember only, like, 1989 Donruss that just had a bunch of cardboard and a stick of gum in it. So the fact that you get jersey cards and patch cards and autograph cards were really exciting for people. So we need to, you know, understand that people, there's a learning curve there, and there's, like, some especially with someone like Michael Jackson, who's passed away and who's a beloved man by, you know, some people obviously hate him and don't like some of the things he did, but there's some people on that total other spectrum that, you know, it's almost like they love Michael Jackson too much. So I could definitely see, I wouldn't say too much, but they love Michael Jackson a lot, and I could see how they could be upset if, you know, that Panini cut up some of his cards. But the bottom line is, you know, Panini made the argument that I think all of us make is, hey, you know, Michael Jackson wore a lot of stuff. I'm sure there's going to be tons of Michael Jackson auctions and things like that coming forward. Why not get, you know, it in as many collectors' hands as possible? And collectors fall on both sides of this other fence. I think some Michael Jackson collectors are thrilled. Some of the purists, some of the people that don't understand cards and don't understand that this has been going on for a long time and it's pretty acceptable now, might take them longer to get them over, but a great exposure. I think the fact that you get Michael Jackson cards in front of people, it's good. And those have been selling for about $3 a pack. I'm not sure if that's more or less than what they started at, but that's basically what you can get out of those. Donruss Elite Football, that actually just came out. That's been kind of interesting. That came out June 22nd. And it has 20 cards per pack. Not 20 cards per pack. You get 20 packs per box, and you get 5 cards per pack. There's 4 hits with at least one auto. I'll have to go check some box breaks because I saw at least one auto, and I was like, man, usually it seems like with the basketball you get at least 2 autos. But I looked at last year's. It's the same as last year's Elite. I think last year's was only guarantee you one auto. So you have 4 hits with at least one auto. I'm not sure if most of them are 2 and 2, or if there's 3 and 1 autos, or if there's 4 autos, or if it's like really you often get 3 jerseys and auto. I'm not exactly sure. I'll have to go look. But you get 4 rookie cards numbered down to 999 or less also in the back. So there's 20 packs. 8 of those packs are going to more than like, I'm not sure if those rookie cards are separate, but I can imagine all 8 of those packs are separate. So it's about $6 a pack. I would look it online. Most people have it priced in that $95 range. So that's pretty expensive. That's going for a decent amount of money. People seem to be excited about this set. Cam Newton, his autographs sell in that 120 plus range. There's someone pulled the 1 of 1 black status already, and he wants $3,000 for it. So I don't know if he was accepting offers or not. AJ Green looks like he's the second most valuable rookie. His was selling in that $50 range, sometimes a little bit higher, sometimes a little bit lower. But for the most part, the early sales looks like he's coming in at number 2 rookie quite a bit. You know, obviously about more than half. It kind of looks like last year's, we'll talk about basketball in a little bit on the next segment, but a little bit like last year's basketball where you had John Wall selling for a bill 20, and then everybody else was selling for, you know, about a third as much. Whereas football, I don't expect this to happen all season. I expect, you know, whether it's AJ Green or Cam Newton or some of these other rookies to do well or not play well. I expect a lot of movement in football cards this year because I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities in both, all not just this year's rookies, but all players in the NFL. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities. But AJ Green's are, for the moment, are selling for about half as much as Cam Newton, and I could definitely see that. Christian Ponder, who is, I believe, the quarterback, the rookie quarterback that was drafted for Minnesota, his cards are getting decent love too. His cards are selling pretty much for about the same price as AJ Green. Coming in right under that is Mark Ingram. His sell for just under those guys, right in the $40 range. So nice group of rookies selling for decent money in here. Andy Dalton, I didn't see any completed auctions, but I can imagine his are probably in that $30 range, maybe $40 range. He's another young quarterback, obviously, I'm hopefully excited about. But there are, you know, I think people thought this was a quote-unquote weak draft, but I think we have some interesting quarterback situations developing here. I think some of these guys are going to get a lot of playing time. If you follow the Bengals like me, AJ Green is probably going to get a lot of playing time, and Andy Dalton might be the starter from day one. So he might be a rare situation. We don't see that in football too much, especially with round two quarterbacks. You know, you do see it with the Matthew Staffords and the Sam Bradfords, the number one guys, and stuff like that, often get the keys to the car fairly early, the Matt Ryans. But second round picks, getting the keys to the car right away, we'll see if it's all talk from the Bengals, and we'll see. There's going to be all kinds of free agency in the NFL. I guess like anybody with 4 years or more experience might become a free agent once they get all. It sounds like the NFL is getting very close, and by the time you listen to this podcast, they're either going to have a deal signed or they're going to have the framework ready, and they've just got to tie in the loose ends. But it sounds like to me the NFL has finally got all the people in the room that need to be. It sounds like before they were just talking through lawyers and phones and Blackberries. Now everybody's in the room. You've got the Crafts and the commissioner, and the players' representatives, and the top lawyers from all representatives, from all, you know, all works of life, and you know, the top owners, the Steelers owners and the Cowboys owners. You have them all in the room talking all at once, and that's really what you needed to have happen in the NFL. So it sounds like that's finally happening, and it sounds like they're definitely making progress, and we're probably definitely gonna have football. I would say it's probably like 99.5% certain now that we'll have football. So I'm excited about that, and I'm excited to see that they're actually finally working it out. It sounds like they're actually working out their disputes in the NFL, and we'll see what happens in basketball, because there's been a lot of talk in basketball. Perfect segue. We'll talk about the NBA draft on this next segment, but we'll also talk about their labor talks, and I have an opinion, and everybody knows that if you listen to this podcast, I was pretty negative on football last year. I'm kind of softening on that a little bit, and I think as all fans are, I think we realize we don't want the game to go away. We don't want it to not be there, and I don't have, you know, I think they are working things out in a pretty civil manner, and they do have a lot of money and a lot of popularity, but you know, I hope that the NFL works it out, but I definitely hope that the NBA works it out. I know a lot of people have been negative on the NBA labor situation, but I have my own opinion. So we'll talk about the NBA draft and a little bit about their lockout situation right after this.
Someone to release me. You're licking your lips and blowing kisses my way, but that don't mean I'm gonna give it away. Baby, baby, baby.
Time to talk about the NBA draft. We'll definitely talk about a lot of the trades that happen and see what teams might have picked up some players. Some teams have definitely got some more depth, and some teams definitely got more exciting. So there was some interesting trades. Point guard goes number one for the second year in a row. Kyrie Irving out of Duke University, I think, goes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So the Cleveland Cavaliers actually had two picks right there, right in the top five picks of the draft. They got this other kid, Thompson, who looked like they stretched, maybe went a little higher than what people thought, but he looked like he was a decent player. Although the Cavs have a lot of those kind of like lengthy guys that are athletic and can jump and can block shots and things like that. So we'll see how well they can team all that together. But they got definitely a lot better. Anytime you add two of the top college talents or two of the top basketball talents in the world, regardless of what people were saying, this draft was weak or whatever, Cleveland definitely got better because they couldn't have gotten much worse. So they'll be more exciting, I think, and they definitely benefited from having two picks right there, right in the top of the draft. So they got the two players I think they wanted. So that was good for Cleveland. But second year in a row, we got a point guard, John Wall last year. I think John Wall, just really quickly to compare the two, I don't think you really can. We'll see what happens when Kyrie actually plays. But John Wall, he played pretty well. When he did play, he played very well. His stats were fairly consistent. His playing, being on the court, wasn't always as consistent. He was hampered by injuries in the beginning of the year and then towards the end of the year. So John Wall never could really get that momentum that he kind of needed. And he was definitely, everybody was kind of overshadowed what Blake Griffin was doing. He was turning himself into one of the top, maybe top dozen, maybe even one of the top 10 players in the league. In terms of fantasy, he's, I think, top five. So, you know, Blake Griffin was turned himself into one of the superstars in the NBA. So it was tough for any of the other rookies to kind of measure up. We'll see how this year's draft class. I would say last year's. Now we can look back and we can say, hey, you know, last year we were kind of talking about earlier on the podcast how the football, you've got Cam Newton's, you know, it almost always happens in every sport. The number one pick goes for a bunch and then everybody else goes for a little bit until everybody starts playing and their role develops on the team. We'll see what happens. But with basketball, it actually happened. We've talked about this on the show too, where it happened throughout the entire season was pretty much John Wall pretty much dominated the market. He was like double what nobody else even like crept above him. Whereas usually we see, you know, like Tyreek was selling for a lot of money. I think even more than Blake Griffin rookies were when Blake Griffin was hurt his first year. Brandon Jennings rookies went up, and sometimes at one point I think he might have been one of the highest and one of the most collected rookies in his rookie season. And we've seen other guys like Wes Matthews and other guys emerge from that year. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that basketball last year we had John Wall dominate the whole season in terms of the basketball. I don't think Kyrie, although I think his cards are going to be valuable, I think people are going to be looking at Derek Williams. People are going to be paying good money for him. I think Jimmer Fredette, I think a lot of people are going to be paying money for him. And I think you'll see rookies that were rookies last year, John Wall, Evan Turner, DeMarcus Cousins, and then a lot of these other guys, the Greg Monroes and the Gary Neals, and Jordan Crawfords, they might emerge and play just as well or maybe even better, especially in the cases of, I think, maybe DeMarcus Cousins, if he can have a good summer and develop his game, and even Evan Turner. It looks like the Sixers might open up things for him there. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think we'll see. I think basketball kind of suffered this year. I think that price movement, you don't need maybe, you know, multiple. Obviously, it's great when you have multiple $100 rookies and it's like just a beautiful year, like 2003-04 basketball. You had Dwayne Wade, and this was even before they all teamed up. I mean, everybody was all excited about Carmelo and Dwayne Wade and Bosch and LeBron, of course. Yeah, obviously it's great. That'll sell any product in any sport. But it's nice to have price movement. Nice to have guys go up and down a little bit, but definitely going up. So I think we'll see that with this year's basketball. So I'm excited to see. You know, I think Jimmer cards will come out hot, and depending on how he does in his first, you know, first month or two in the NBA season, we'll see if those go up even higher. And I think a lot of these guys, people might be waiting to see what happens. But if some of them play well, you might see some pretty good moves, because it's one of those drafts. Nobody knows, you know, somebody's going to set the bar, but it's not like clear cut like John Wall last year, where when you open the box, you know, you were just hoping for the John Wall. Now, you know, whoever starts playing well, whoever emerges as a big role on their team and maybe as the top rookie, you might be able to capitalize when you open boxes. So, but there was a whole bunch of trades. I want to talk about some of the trades that happened in the NBA. George Hill, he's point guard, if you're not familiar with him, point guard, backup point guard, for the backup I don't know if he even plays shooting guard, but I'm pretty sure he plays point guard or one of those positions for San Antonio. He got traded to Indiana for quite a few picks, for the number 15 pick, 42 pick, and the 46 pick. So I was thinking that San Antonio was also rumored to maybe be trading Tony Parker and maybe some other pieces, but mainly Tony Parker. And I still believe San Antonio is probably still shopping Tony Parker, or they're still looking to trade him or looking for another suitor. I really think that maybe Gary Neal might be the next in line here. I think George Hill was a good player. Gary Neal was a rookie last year. If you project his stats out to 48 minutes, tremendous talent. He didn't get a whole lot of playing time because George Hill was there and Tony Parker was there. But Gary Neal still put up good numbers in his short amount of playing time that he got last year. So he's a guy I'm really looking for next year, even if it's just him. And if Tony happens to return, I think there'll be pressure from the upper management to play some of the younger players and get kind of a different look going in San Antonio. I think Gary will get more minutes now that George Hill is gone. And it doesn't look like the Spurs replaced him with a point guard or anything like that in the draft. So we'll see what happens. But I'm really excited about Gary Neal. I bid on one of his rookie cards last week on eBay. I was trying to get it for less than $10, but he only has one in contenders. But he actually has another one coming out in season update. I think they're coming at season update's one of those. I won't say weird product. It's an interesting product. I actually like the theme of the product, but it's kind of unfortunate with a guy like Gary Neal because he has only, I think, one autograph rookie. I think he's only in the contenders patches basketball. That's his only autograph rookie. So it's actually pretty cool if he actually turns out to be a solid player, and especially a really good player. That card will be worth a lot, and it'll bring a lot of attention to that set. But he's going to have some cards in season update. The only maybe issue I have is he has like a prestige coming out, and I think he has another one coming out in that set that kind of mimics a set that they already came out with. So it kind of makes it, you know, obviously collecting within the year, you kind of realize it's season update, but 2, 3, 4 years down the line, collectors, you know, get confused by it. And that may be when Gary Neal actually emerges as a solid player and actually gets the minutes he needs to put up the stats to make his cards go up. People might think, oh, he had a prestige, but in actuality, he only had one autograph rookie for all of the season in which they played. So, but I am looking forward to season update, and I say that he has one more. I guarantee you he has National Treasures, I'm sure, and I think there's another basketball totally certified. He'll probably have one in there too. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure that Panini will probably get him in there. So at the end of the year, to round out my thought there, I didn't want to go higher than 10 on his contenders because I'm thinking now, you know, hey, yeah, I guess if Tony Parker gets moved out, it probably will bring some attention to his cards to the savvy basketball collectors. But especially if they move Tony out for not another point guard. If it's like Tony's gone and it's Gary Neal basically slated as a starter, I can imagine his cards will probably go up. But he should have more supply coming down to the market. That's kind of my point is, you know, I'm not going to overpay now when he's got season update coming. He'll have National Treasures probably. He'll have Totally Certified. So he's got all these different rookie cards. I'm not going to overpay now because chances are the supply will go up. I'm able to get it for definitely under 10. I'm looking to get it for under 10. But that's my George Hill trade. The Bobcats, Bucks, and Kings were involved in an interesting three-team trade. The Bobcats just keep unloading players. I'm not Michael Jordan. A lot of people call him cheap. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe that is the case. But I guess most of the NBA teams are losing money outside the Mavericks, Lakers, Heat, Boston, and New York. I don't think a whole lot of teams in the NBA make money. Chicago probably makes money too. But the Bobcats are definitely one of those teams that loses money. And so they're shedding payroll and they're getting younger. Although they got Corey Maggette in one of the trades, I doubt his contract is too lengthy, although he might have 2 years left. We'll see what happens with that. But they traded Steven Jackson. They got Steven Jackson and Sean Livingston, a guy that if you're a longtime basketball collector, remember he was a top pick, I think, by LA LA Clippers, and he was out of high school, I think, and everybody was big on him. And then he had a couple really, if you look on YouTube, although you might not want to, he had some really nasty knee injuries in a game. But he's come back, and last year was kind of the first year where I felt like he actually made a name again for himself in the NBA. He got some playing time. He played fairly well toward the end of the season. He's not going to be the Sean Livingston out of high school superstar. Those of you my age and those of you that collected basketball back then remember him. But he's still a solid player. So the Bobcats traded him, S-Jax, who was their biggest scorer. So with the Bobcats, man, I had that Gerald Henderson autograph rookie. So I'm kind of excited about that because they kind of unloaded everybody. They got the number 7 pick, and they picked a foreign guy who probably will need some time to develop. But they don't have a whole lot there. Bobcats don't have a whole lot left. The Bucks, Milwaukee got a lot deeper. This was a team that has some solid pieces, and they play defense kind of. But I felt like last year the only thing missing for the Bucks were they were getting hurt. Andrew Bogut's always hurt. Carlos Delfino got hurt. All their players. Michael Redd has been hurt for years. He finally came back. But everybody on that team seemed like they got hurt. But they got deeper, it seems like. I don't know if they'll have to unload some other people. But they got Steven Jackson. They got Bueno Udrich from the Kings. They got Sean Livingston, which is interesting. They got the number 19 pick. So this is a real deep team. I would avoid probably the Bucks more than likely in fantasy now. I was targeting some of their players before, but now no way on the Bucks. They have too many players, but it's good for a Bucks fan. I think you're going to have the depth. If you're a Bucks fan, you're going to have the depth you needed, and you've got players in through the draft. You didn't draft really anybody that's going to make an impact, but you made trades and got players on your team that's going to make an impact. They're going to help you win games next year. I guess Steven Jackson might be a little upset about moving to Milwaukee, but here's a guy that's been moved over his entire career, so I'm sure by the end of the summertime and when those checks need to start rolling in, he'll be fine. And the Kings made an interesting move. They made a PR move. They got Jimmer Fredette, although it might work out to be very good, depending on your opinion of the other players in the draft. And they got John Salmons back, who seemed to play fairly well when he was with the Kings, and so they got him back. But the Kings have no defense, so they traded away pretty much anybody that can play defense, and they traded away a little bit of depth as well. And because I don't know if Jimmer is going to be able to play heavy minutes, I think he's conditioned to do it, but defensively wise, he'd probably be somewhat of a liability in his first season. But we'll see. He'll be able to play zone defense. The Kings should be able to zone it out and be able to hide some of his weaknesses out on the court if they can get some bodies. They need some bodies on the Kings. That's what they need, is some big fouling 7-footers that just foul every other guy that comes down the lane. That's what they need. Houston, more trades. This is a good one. Houston and Minnesota made a trade. Houston really, really, I think, did pretty well in here. They got Johnny Flynn and the number 20 pick. All they had to really give up, I say all they had to give up, was Brad Miller, the number 23 pick, the 38 pick, and a later first-round pick. I'm not sure if it's next year or the year after. But if you're Houston, you're hedging on possibly Yao Ming coming back, which I wouldn't bet on. But you do have Johnny Flynn. You have Kevin Martin there. I think you have – there's several – Chase Budinger actually played fairly well. He's a young player there that fills a need and a role on their team. They have several other players there that are good. So we'll see what happens with Houston. But they're betting on their future with Johnny Flynn. So they traded for him. And the last trade, this is a great one. This might be one of the best – this is maybe one of the best trades – of the season. I know that Dallas was trying to get Rudy Fernandez toward the end of the break with no luck, because I know that Portland, I don't know if Rudy really gets along with people there. I don't know what's up, but Rudy tends to have a tenuous relationship with people in Portland, and Dallas really wanted him. Dallas likes those kind of players. Dallas likes shooters and guys that kind of run up and down the floor and can play a little bit of D. I think Rudy can D it up fairly, I wouldn't say fairly well, but decently for, you know, what you stereotype foreign players as. But basically, Portland, they felt a need. They got a Portland. They also got rid of Andre Miller, who seemed like he didn't like Portland either. So Portland got Raymond Felton, the number 26th pick, and the 57th pick. Denver got Andre Miller, so they add another point guard. They got like two or three there, and a future second. So I'm not exactly sure what they're doing there. Maybe Andre Miller's contract's expiring or something like that. So maybe Denver's trying to clear it out. I'm not sure why they would get Andre Miller, but it looks like Denver got the shaft in this deal. Dallas probably got the best end of this deal because they got Rudy Fernandez and a number 30 pick, and they didn't really have to give up a whole lot. So I think they got a great deal. Rudy Fernandez will fit in very well with Dallas, and Dallas is one of those teams we didn't really talk about. Dallas winning the NBA Finals, so congratulations if you're a Dallas fan. You've been waiting a long time, and being a Lakers fan, we're very spoiled. We win titles all the time, so I could imagine, you know, it's just like the Giants winning the World Series. I've never seen them win a World Series. I didn't think I was going to see them win a World Series, so it was very, and it came at a surprise, so very similar experience. So I'm glad that, I hope if you're a Dallas fan, you're enjoying it, and it'll, believe me, if it's anything like the Giants, it'll just carry over into next season. But now that I pump you up a little bit, let me totally ruin my compliment for you. Dallas was one of those teams where, man, they were trying to make trades. They were trading guys, and then I think Tyson Chandler got sent back. You know, they picked up Peja, and that didn't really work out. They were starting, like, that Bobois dude, three-quarters of the way through the season. They had so many different lineups, and they went through a lot of different players. I know Sean Marion wasn't starting, then he was, and I think they had an injury to somebody too. Dallas went through the whole thing. I don't think they're the most they would tell you too. They're not the most talented team in the NBA. They definitely don't have the most people recognize. They are one of the older teams in the NBA, so it shows you with experience and with solid coaching and with timely shooting, you can win an NBA title. I'm not exactly sure where I was going with this, but I look back down on my sheet here. Rudy Fernandez is going to fit in great there, man. I'm really excited. I think if you're a Dallas fan, you probably know that, hey, if we're going to make a run at this again next year, we're probably going to have to get better. It's not like the Lakers are going to get worse, really. It's not like Oklahoma City's going to get worse. San Antonio's probably still going to be there. They still had a really good season. And Memphis snuck up, and they'll get Rudy Gay back. So there's people in the West. So Dallas fans, I'm sure, are feeling the heat a little bit. So you want to get better. So I'm excited. I'm not exactly sure if that was the point I was trying to make, but Dallas fans should be really excited that you got Rudy Fernandez, because I think you not necessarily stole a championship, because you shot well enough to win and played zone defense and team defense well enough to win and rebounded the ball well enough to win, but and shot free throws well enough to win. But Dallas is a team that put it together, and with this added piece of Rudy Fernandez, they should be able to keep on rolling and be able to roll right into next season as one of the, you know, five or six, seven teams that definitely have a really, really good shot at winning the NBA championship. So that was a really good trade for them. In terms of the teams that I think got better, I think the Bucks definitely got better. They got deeper. They needed depth on that team because they've had injury problems and they had problems scoring the ball. And S-Jack, he might not solve your injury problems, but he can definitely solve some scoring problems. Bueno's a solid player. They got some backcourt help, so I like what they did. Utah, I think they did pretty good. They drafted a taller player right at the top of the draft, I think, with the third pick. I like what they did there. They also had another pick later in the draft where they drafted another, I think, an athletic guy. So I liked what Utah does. And they also have some young players too. They have that player they traded from the Nets. I can't remember his name. But they have his name, Favors. I think Derek Favors or something like that. They have him. They have quite a few players there. Devin Harris. So I'm excited about to see what happens with Utah. I think they're a solid team. They have depth. They rebound the ball well. I still think they're coached well. So they have a good concept there. I'm excited about them. Indiana, I think, with George Hill, they didn't have to get, I mean, the number 15 pick. We'll have to go back and see what he was drafted at. But to give up three draft picks and a 15th pick, just outside the lottery for George Hill. I think they gave up a lot for that, but if they didn't have much in mind for that pick, if they didn't want to commit to a guy for that many seasons or whatever it might be, George Hill might be a good fit. So they might have done well. The teams that I think got the teams that I'd be so excited if I was a fan of these teams were Washington and Sacramento. Obviously, Washington, not a lot of hope there. Haven't had a lot of hope. Haven't won a lot of games, even with John Wall coming in. A lot of guys got hurt last year. But this team's really young. They've got a really nice core group of young players that I think if these four group, or maybe there's five here. No, there's four. So John Wall, Nick Young, Jordan Crawford, and the guy they drafted number six, some guy named Vesely. I'm not exactly sure if he's going to be able to break it into the starting lineup. But those four guys, if they can contribute and play well together and start to learn to mesh together in Washington, I think that's a team probably not going to play a whole lot of defense, but could definitely score the ball in bunches. And you'll see, I think, John Wall, Nick Young, and Jordan Crawford, if it emerges the way I think it does, if they don't get a veteran or get some coach that wants to be silly and dump it into the post and do stupid stuff with that team should just run it up and down the court, and you'll have John Wall leading the team in scoring one night, you'll have Nick Young doing it another night, and you'll have Jordan Crawford doing it another night. And throughout the course of a week, all three will be sharing the scoring load. That's what I would try to focus on if I was that team. Have John Wall be the focus. Let him distribute. If he can get to the paint and score and draw fouls, he can. If they close it off and double team him, that's when he passes out to Nick Young and Jordan Crawford and let them do their thing. So I think you should see Washington do pretty well. Sacramento is another. Both these teams are going to be exciting to watch because neither of them are going to play defense, I don't think, unless they just totally surprise me here. But Sacramento, I'm almost 100% sure this team is going to play absolutely no defense. It's going to be like old school Don Nelson basketball. Tyreke, I think, is going to go to the number two position, probably play a little point guard, because he can probably, if his foot's okay next year, he'll be able to play heavy minutes. DeMarcus Cousins is hopefully got his head on straight. This is a guy, I was bidding on his card. Full disclosure on him, I was bidding on his card today. I was trying to get an autograph rookie, his absolute, for under 20, but it's ended at like $26 ship. So I was kind of dreaming there. But I was thinking maybe not on the NBA draft night. Maybe when there's a night when there's a bunch of them ending or something, I might be able to scoop I'm trying to look for a DeMarcus Cousins for under $20 delivered for a rookie. So if you got one out there and you want to hook me up, sportscardshow@gmail.com. Sacramento also, if you want to email me, Jim or Ferdette, we get you on the show, sportscardshow@gmail.com or sportscardradio@gmail.com. He's gotten added. He'll probably start, I bet. You know, just knowing how Sacramento does things, he'll probably start. I could be wrong. We'll see what happens. He did play fairly heavy minutes and was relied upon fairly heavily in college. So we'll see what happens with Jimmer. But Kings are going to zone it up. Everybody's talking about defense. Who plays defense in the NBA? Outside the handful of players in the NBA, I love all these people that get on TV and they're like, oh man, Jimmer's going to get burnt on D. This dude's going to get burnt on D. Nobody plays defense in the NBA. How well did LeBron play defense in the NBA Finals? How well does Dirk play defense? How well does, you know, outside of Kobe Bryant and, you know, a couple other players, Tim Duncan maybe, there's not too many players that really play defense in the NBA. So Chris Paul, I know, gets a lot of steals, and he's very active on the defensive end, so he's maybe another one. There's quite a few others, but there's not that many. You know, it's not like in the past, not like old school NBA where that was a really, really big part. You know, we got teams like the Suns and Sacramento now, and even Washington to a certain extent. There's a couple other teams. They don't even try to play defense. You know, even the old school Maverick teams, they didn't even try to play defense. You know, they just zone, you know, once they changed it to the zone rules, they just went walk back, played zone, trapped, you know, tried to pinch the corners off. And, you know, they came and they tried to run the ball up. You know, Phoenix would run drills where it was like their goal to try to score off a break you know, within 2 or 3 seconds. That was like their whole goal. The whole offense was try to score as quickly as they can. So, you know, I don't give too much credence to Jimmer Fournette not being able to play defense. If Sacramento can surround him with guys that can, you know, cut off gaps and have long arms and stuff and don't allow guys to penetrate the lane after they beat him, sure, he's going to get beat. Derrick Rose will blow by Jimmer. Same with Russell Westbrook. Those guys will just blow by everybody in the league, let alone Jimmer Fournette. So, you know, let alone when he's out there. So, you know, what Sacramento needs is, you know, the big guys underneath to step up and the guys on the perimeter to tighten up. And we'll see what happens. So it'll definitely lead to some open shots, and Sacramento will be vulnerable to that. But so was Dallas. You know, it's not like J.J. Barrera couldn't, you know, D up Derrick Rose or anything. It just so happened Miami didn't have that solid of a point guard. So we'll see what happens. I think that would have been a good matchup. Chicago and Dallas, I think. Not that Miami. I think Miami was just too full of themselves to win it at this point. They might mature a little bit down the road and be able to win a title. But I think Chicago, the way it worked out, if Dallas was able to make it, I think you know, that would have been an interesting one. I think if the Lakers and Miami would have went to it, that would have been like the head case finals. I really think Miami probably would have went to it, because I think they actually had their heads on screwed just one rotation, you know, more than the Lakers, which is fairly loose. You know, you're almost coming out of the bolt or the net there. But Dallas, for sure, again, to wrap their championship, they had their bolt tightened all the way through, from the top of the organization all the way down to the bottom. They run a good organization there, and they were rewarded, so I'm happy for Dallas. But NBA draft is over, and our long segment, that was a deep segment on the NBA draft, so all the baseball fans and football fans out there can tune out. Although I did want to make one note. Everybody's all talking about how negative. I don't want to debunk another NBA myth that people are putting out there, that the NBA is in this danger, that they'll go to a lockout. They're in a worse position than football. You got to take that. You know, we're 100 days in to the NFL lockout, and they're just now getting to the point where they're missing meaningful stuff, where it's like training camp and like all the guys are there at the college or at the facility or whatever, training together. We're just getting to that point where the teams are actually missing something. So it took 100 days, and the NFL are just now getting together and getting the right people in the room and starting to talk about it. The NBA has actually been doing that. You've had over the NBA finals, you had the commissioner, you had the LA Lakers owner, you had basically all the owners that were making money, the New York owner, Dallas Maverick, the Miami Heat, the Chicago owner, all the owners that were making money were there. And so they've been talking. Now, we'll see what ends up happening going forward with the NBA. But the fact that most of the higher-up parties that are interested in this are talking and are at the table with the players' reps, and I think negotiations probably going well. We know that the NBA doesn't start. The NBA has like a 10 or 12 game preseason. Nobody watches that on TV. The NFL preseason is far more covered than the NBA preseason. So nobody cares. And the NBA has, I think, they don't have like a sophisticated training camp and all this stuff. That's more for the younger players. You know, you don't see Kobe, although Kobe does play in the exhibition games. I don't think Kobe's game's going to be that hard off if he doesn't play in any exhibition games or doesn't get any practice with the Lakers. So NBA season doesn't start till October. That leaves plenty of months, more than 100 days to work it out. I think if football has had more to lose, they had more fans to lose, they had more money to lose, so I can understand that it takes more time to work out because there's more pie there to eat. And the players, not that they're all paid well, the owners, more owners are making money there, so the owners are less likely to budge. Where in the NBA, most of the owners are not making money. Most of the teams are not making money. A lot of the players aren't making money. If you think about an NBA team, yeah, there's a couple players that we all know that make a lot of money, but think about the guy that doesn't play a whole lot. You know, and if he lives in the U.S., your tax, especially fairly wealthy, you know, you get in that couple hundred thousand, they're taxed like 30, 40, 50, 60% in some cases. If you're not smart enough with your money, you can get taxed in the upwards of 60%. So, you know, if you got a $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 contract, that sounds like a lot until it gets wiped off, half of it gets wiped away. So among other taxes and ways your money can just get swiped from you. So we'll see what happens. I think the NBA will come to agreement. I think it'll take a while. It'll take all summer. They'll probably talk it out plenty of times, and they'll go back and forth all these different times, and they'll threaten. They'll probably have a lockout, and they'll probably say 10 million times, we're not going to play, we're not going to play. It's going to be a shortened season, whatever. Football said the same thing. Football said, hey, we're not going to play, we're not going to play, we're not going to play. Well, it looks like football's going to play. Looks like they're probably not going to even miss anything even close to meaningful in terms of preseason or even training camp. So, you know, the NBA's got plenty of time to work it out. If you're an NBA fan like me and you're worried, don't be. I'm not worried. These guys will work it out. To finish off my point, the NBA has less, even less, at stake. You know, they have less fans. They have less money. That leads me, some people might say that they're more inclined to lock out. No, no, no. To me, that means if the pie's even smaller to eat, you know, then you're going to choose to at least eat a little pie. Whereas the NFL, you could probably go a year without football, and the most of the owners are going to be cool. Most of the players are going to be cool. The NBA goes half a season without basketball. A lot of the players aren't going to be cool. Most of the owners are going to be broke as hell. So, you know, I think the NBA is going to do everything they can to play, because the last thing they want is no basketball, because then you lose even more money. Because you're already losing money now. If you don't have any basketball, it should be a nightmare for you. You'd have that arena just sitting there empty, and you'd be paying that lease, and it'd be driving you crazy. So that about wraps it up on this segment of basketball. When we come back, we're going to focus a little bit more on cards, although I could have focused that segment a little bit more on cards. We'll have plenty of time throughout the whole season to talk about basketball cards and stuff like that. So, but when we come back, we'll wrap it up with kind of our, I'm not exactly sure, but we'll be talking about collector strategies. I'll kind of be going through a couple of them, or actually most of them. I'll probably definitely go through most of them, where we talk about, you know, the kind of different aspects you can kind of get into collecting and the kind of different things you can go into. So if you're having trouble focusing, or if you, you know, if you're thinking about quitting the hobby, hey, listen to this next segment. I think you'll be able to find something that you could focus on. Or if you're thinking about trying something new, or maybe spending your money a little bit differently, hopefully we have some ideas for you on this next segment right after this.
Paula wants a cracker. Think I should get off the first. Think she wants some water to put out the blowtorch. Is it me? Heaven said, let me clear dirty lanes. Let me take a ride. Hurt yourself. Want some help? Help myself. Got some rope. Haven't told.
And we are back. Time for our last segment for today. Now we're going to talk a little bit about kind of just the different kind of things, maybe sorting through the clutter, maybe trying to focus in on your collection. I know we've had other shows on this in the past, but throughout this past past couple months, I've been buying cards on Check Out My Cards, been buying cards at eBay, I bought cards at a card show, been buying cards when I stop at a card shop, and just try to, you know, find all kinds of interesting cards. So I've been really enjoying that. And so it kind of got me, I kind of, you know, like I said, we've talked about this on the show, but I've kind of maybe put it together now that I've been going through. I've been trying to trade cards on forums. So there's all kinds of different ways you can get into card collecting. And it kind of made me think, man, sometimes you got to focus in on stuff, or you got to focus in on certain things, especially if you're trying to make a profit or you're trying to get the most out of your money. I'm not necessarily trying to make money or trying to make, you know, pay for my lunch or anything. I'm just trying to get the most out of my money and the most out of my collection. So I just think, you know, sometimes you got to focus in. Sometimes you got to, like, you know, pick and choose things because there's so much out there. So basically, you know, you start with card collecting, and it could be you're buying boxes or packs or single cards or vintage, and there's all kinds of stuff. But I kind of, you know, broke it down into maybe like two or three groups. My two main groups are buyers and buyer and a seller, someone that buys cards and sells cards, and you could probably throw in trading there. Someone that's actively doing that, that's, you know, maybe buying cards with the intention of selling them later, or selling a card to buy more. You know, I think those people are somewhat different than the set builder, like the hardcore set builder, the person that opens up a box and gets, you know, XYZ cards, and then is looking for to fill that set. And, you know, sometimes they're willing to trade away cards, you know, maybe that are more desirable, just to fill that set up. You know, they don't care that, hey, they're trading a hot prospect rookie that they might be able to sell later for 50 base cards. They just want those 50 base cards so they can, you know, complete their set. So I think there's obviously some similarities there, but I think there's definitely a difference there. You know, someone like me, do I want a set build? I think set build would be really fun, but I think it requires a little bit more time than I'm willing to put into it, but definitely the money. I think if I had a lot more money, I think it would be fun to, you know, open up. I think it would be fun to open up a couple boxes. I wouldn't do set building the most profitable way or probably the most economical way. I think I'd like to open up some boxes, and if I like the cards or if I liked maybe a certain set in there, then I would go and look to complete it with whatever I had left or whatever boxes I, you know, didn't open and I couldn't get the cards. So I think I would do it that way, and I think it is fun to get a brand new one of those white folding boxes and then stack up your 200 cards or whatever in there and then get a Sharpie and then write it on there and then put it on the wall and then put it in the closet or put it wherever you store your cards and then boom, you're done, and then it's on to the next thing. There is some achievement there, and there's you know, goals that you can set and you can visually achieve them, whereas buying and selling, sometimes it's over a long period of time. If you're somebody that needs like goals to hit constantly, set building is like really for you, because then you can pick easy sets and hit goals. Whereas buying and selling, like, you know, this month in our buying and selling challenge with my brother, I've been really cold. I've been having trouble finding things to buy, kind of. I've been really having trouble selling things. I got things marked down to where, like, I'm making like a penny on it, like 1 cent over what I paid for it. I guess I overpaid for it, I guess. But I've got like the lowest price on Checkout My Cards by like a dollar or two, and I still can't sell it. You know what I mean? The guy's like 4-1, and he's got like a 1-point ERA in the minor leagues. You know, I can't even sell anybody right now. So buying and selling, you definitely have to be patient. Set building, you have to be patient too. But buying and selling, your goals don't hit, you know, as easily as sometimes set building is going out and buying a box and getting your extras, or, you know, looking online and just buying the card numbers you need. So, although it kind of depends. But I think there's two separate groups there. But I'll focus on a little bit on buying and selling. I think that's the one I have a little bit more focus on. And then branching out from that, branching out from buying and selling, you can buy and sell wax. You can buy and sell vintage cards. You can buy and sell just rookie cards. You can buy and sell autograph and jersey cards of veteran players and rookies. You can buy and sell base cards. You can buy and sell whatever. There's tons of different things you can buy and sell. Most people kind of experiment in it all, but usually if you want to become like a lead at it, take a look at like Blowout Cards and Dave and Adams. They could easily have probably like, they probably do have single cards all over the place, you know, just from some random stuff they get. I know Blowout Cards was buying like jersey and autograph cards for like a dollar each, or there for a while. I don't know if they still do it for $1.50 each. I don't know how much they were paying for them. But Sight Unseen or whatever, it's from a legitimate brand. But you know, it's a reason why they don't have like a single card store, you know, at least one that they openly promote under the same label. But it's because they want to sell boxes really well, and they want to sell wax boxes the best. You know what I mean? So you really got to focus in, and like our sponsor Baseball Factory Sets, you know, hey, our sponsor Baseball Factory Sets just sells baseball boxes. And that's kind of interesting, you know. So he doesn't focus on football, doesn't focus on basketball. So although I think he has a football site, but that's kind of interesting. If you want to, you know, be a at the top of your game at the buying and selling, I really do think you got to focus in on something and really get to know the market, get to know what's going on and stuff like that. So same with vintage cards, you need to get in there and know all the rare conditions and which one, you know, aside from the Mickey Mantles and all that, all the oddballs and all the errors. With the rookies, you need to stay on the hot guys, and you know, that's where buying and selling really comes into play, because the rookies are often hot for just a small window. So you need to buy at the right time, and you definitely need to sell at the right time. Both are really important, especially buying. You know, you don't want to buy the rookie when he's getting hot. You know, that's the time to move on to somebody else. That's the time you should be selling. So in autograph and jersey cards, obviously there's game worn and there's prime patches and there's jumbo patches and there's the more rare ones and whatever. So it's all a different market. And so I think as a buyer and seller, if you're having trouble buying and selling, if you're like, hey, I'm a card collector, I like to buy and sell. If you're kind of like me, you're just trying to get the most out of your money. Some people, you know, they have spreadsheets and they keep track of it all, and they want to make sure they make money on every sale or a large percentage of the sale. You need to really focus in on something. You really need to focus and be good at your game and see the people that are doing it well. You know, the people that are selling wax boxes well, what do they do well? How can you improve on it? People that sell vintage well, buy and sell vintage well, you need to start doing those kind of things. People that prospect well, all those kind of things. And it kind of ties in to gambler. You're a gambler, you know, with set building. You kind of know what you're getting. You kind of know what you're getting into with a set. You know, some sets obviously take maybe more financial time and more time to fill the set because the cards might be more rare. But you're gambling a little bit less because you're trying to build the set, more than likely not to sell it down the road, but to just keep it and hold on to it and maybe sell it as it appreciates, but that's not really the whole point. Buying and selling, you're a gambler. Whereas with set building, I would put those kind of card collecting more in the stasher. And that's like in a positive connotation, that you stash things, that you collect things, and that you want to keep them and you don't want them to go away. And so I think both can complement each other. I think set builders can learn stuff from buyers and sellers, and buyers and sellers can learn things from set builders. I think they both go hand in hand. Can you do both? Can you be a buyer and seller and be collecting sets at the same time? Of course you can. I'm not on here to say you can't collect any way you want to, but I think a smart collector definitely is aware of these kind of things, and you definitely have like self-awareness. I think that's important in a lot of things in life, but definitely with card collecting, you could definitely take it. Obviously, we have a podcast, and we're in our third year, coming into our third year, and we're 78 shows deep. So you do have to think deeply about cards. You got to think about it on maybe a different level. So definitely think about, have some self-awareness as we're closing in on this podcast, as my voice is definitely giving out on me. Do some thinking about, you know, what kind of collector. Are you a gambler, or are you more the person that likes to take it safe and maybe likes to keep things and maybe likes to maybe not like to get rid of the cards? You like to keep them, and you don't really care if they go up in value, because they might go up in value even more down the road. So I consider those people like collectors and stashers, and then gamblers, you're the out there buying and selling. You're like me. I bought my first Jermaine Gresham autograph rookie this past week on Check Out My Cards, and I got a good deal because he had two Topps Platinum. They were patch jersey, and they had an autograph. There was like serial numbered out of 800, and one was like a 3-color patch, and then one was a 1-color like white patch. Still a nice card, and I think he had one listed at $6, and he had the 3-color patch listed at $7.99. Well, I was like, screw that. I made him an offer both for $10, so I got both cards basically for $5 each, so I think I did pretty good. Well, if you're like me, you know, if you're a set builder or a team collector or whatever, you would just hold on to those cards at your request shipment. Well, I immediately listed the one color. I want to relist the one color. Even if I only get 50 cents, 60 cents out of it, I'd much rather do that. Keep the three color if Jermaine has a good season, or if the Bengals surprise people, or if he emerges as maybe one of the top four or five tight ends in the league, and definitely is one of the people who start giving him maybe a little bit more attention as being one of the better younger tight ends in the league. You know, I might sell the three color, maybe try to get $10 out of the three color patch. So, but I'm definitely on the buyer and seller. I'm on the gambler. I'm trying to move things out, in and out. You know, even though I like Jermaine Gresham, I like the Bengals, and I actually want that card. If I had it here, I probably wouldn't sell it. But the fact that I'm on check out my cards, buying and selling, it is kind of fun. And there's so many cards to buy and sell. I might as well see if I can. I think I got a good price on it. I think $5, that's pretty good to get an autographed jersey patch rookie. I was looking. That was like $5 was cheaper than some guys that don't have any hope of playing in that set. So I was pretty excited about that. Getting that card. So, you know, do some self as we go away, as we're on the tail end of this podcast. You know, do some self-reflection of your collecting. Are you a gambler or are you a stasher? Which basically, if you're a gambler, I think if you're more kind of the gambling kind of personality, you like to take risk, I think you should buy and sell. And you should, if you want to become really good at it, you should pick something. Unopened boxes to vintage to rookies, to veteran players, autographs and jersey cards, to whatever it might be. Try to find something and really become very good at it. I think you'll find good rewards with it. If you're kind of a collector, if you don't like to gamble, if you don't like to take risk, you like to keep things and you're very, you like to keep things close to you, you're definitely a set builder. Collect a favorite team, a player, pick a brand or an insert, or even, you know, rookies, vintage, even wax boxes. You can collect and set build wax boxes, although be careful with the redemption cards in there. Usually, not always, but usually the redemption cards in there aren't always the top end players, but sometimes it is. You know, with basketball, if it's John Wall and Kobe, you know, you got to open that box up within the whatever the 2-year window they give you. So, but for the most part, if you're a set builder, you're doing vintage, you're doing, you know, you're doing certain brands or certain sets or certain sports you like. So focus in on that. And I think if you've been in and out of the hobby the last couple years, or if you're just getting back into it for the first time, or you're hoping to stay, you know, some people, they like get into the hobby and they're like, man, I hope I stay in it for a long time. Well, become self-aware. Start identifying what kind of personality you have, and then tie that over to your collection. I think you'll have a lot more fun with it, and you should have some success. Well, hopefully you've had some success learning some new things on this podcast. I know I've pretty much talked about everything that I've had on tap for today. We've covered a lot of interesting topics. Hopefully they, maybe not a whole lot on sports cards. I guess that last segment and the first segment, but covered a lot on the NBA draft. We'll hopefully have more things to talk about with football, hopefully getting things going again, and hopefully baseball will get more exciting than mid-season action. So, well, I'm sure baseball will start spicing up here very soon. That about wraps it up for today. Hopefully everything's going good for you guys. Thanks for everybody that has contacted me over the past weeks, months, and years at sportscardshow@gmail.com. Always encourage you to send me your questions, comments, concerns, whatever it might be. You can shoot me an email and I will do that. Hopefully we've got some exciting podcasts and some exciting things coming for you soon. And I'm sure we will. We've got our 3rd year anniversary coming up, so better step up our game and better bring some excitement and some big things to you. That's no guarantee, but I would be excited if that actually did come to fruition. So, just like you. But that wraps it up for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, we are out of here.